Hello and welcome to the House Einstein podcast. This is podcast 38. I am Osman Parvez with House Einstein, and with me is Hamish Crabb. Welcome, Hamish.
Hello, hello. I'm Hamish Crabb. I hope the brokerage runs smoothly and pretty much assist with all tasks. But today, it's podcasts.
That's right. Today, yeah. We are podcasting. Podcast 38. It's been a few weeks, and you have our apologies for the delay. First, we had a mega snowstorm, and that took out power to my house. I was running on generator, but it felt a little weird to do a podcast and run everything on generator. We probably should have just gone ahead, but we didn't. And then there was some travel the following week. And in the meantime, we've got listings coming up and negotiating and working on deals. And clients are the number one priority. So if you notice a lull in our marketing and our podcast and our content, it's usually because we're busy with clients, not because we just got bored.
Yeah, you can bet on it because it's not real stress, but we do get a little bit of stress when we don't get our weekly podcast recorded and out. So it's, one of our priorities. Absolutely.
Yep. And our mission is to help you make a smarter real estate decision at House Einstein. That's also how we approach the podcast, but we want to add in a little disclaimer that this podcast is entertainment only. If you are a client or prospective client, the best way to reach us is to visit houseeinstein.com. You'll see my contact information there, Hamish's contact information, as well as contact info for other agents on the team. And we cover everything from South Denver suburbs all the way up to Fort Collins. And we also cover the mountain towns of Boulder County, as well as the resort towns, including Breckenridge and Frisco and Winter Park. And so if you are thinking about buying or selling in those markets and you would like to work with us, well, reach out. We're happy to talk to you about your specific real estate situation. And with that, let's talk about our topics du jour.
Really quick. You just started at South Boulder. Don't we go a little bit more southern than that?
Did I say South Boulder? I thought yeah. I said South Denver. Oh,
no, correction. South Boulder.
South Denver. Okay. South Denver suburbs, not South Boulder suburbs. I think there's something going on with my brain where I think I'm saying something and I'm saying something else. The other day, I had clients behind me. We were pulling up in front of this house. And in my brain, I'm like, okay, leave enough space for them to park. Because there were like enough space for two cars between the driveway, you know, the driveway perches on the sidewalk. And I parked and I got out and I watched them try to park behind me and not have enough room and go turn, make a U-turn and park somewhere else. And I looked and I'm like, I left so much room in front of the car. It was embarrassing. And in my brain, I thought I was right up against the driveway. And so I was like, what is going on? I think it's just a aging thing. Huh. So yes, I mean, we cover South Denver suburbs. In fact, I've even done deals in Colorado Springs, but we only do deals outside of our footprint if we have a pre-existing relationship. Mm-hmm. So those clients would rather work with an agent they know and trust. And so three or four deals I've now done in Colorado Springs. I've been on their MLS. I'm currently on four MLSs, but I went down there and stayed for the weekend at an Airbnb, and we looked at tons of homes, and they just would prefer to work with somebody that knows that they know and they trust, and somebody who approaches real estate the way I did. And I'm happy to do that with past clients. But if you're a new client to us, it has to be a really compelling reason. Otherwise, we'll find a referral partner for you. Mm. We'll do the research. We'll interview them, make sure it's a good fit. And then we'll partner you with another agent that's competent. But I don't usually go down to Colorado Springs.
Yeah, it's a bit of a stretch. Yeah. Yeah, on the showing side of things, it's always kind of a trick with the parking. Usually I'll leave like the driveway open for the clients to park in and I'll go on the curb or something, but you never know. Yeah.
I mean, prior to COVID, I always had clients in the car. Mm. And even now, sometimes I'll pick them up, but it's just convenient to not do that. So there's a reason I have realtor cars. I really prefer older Toyotas and older German vehicles, but there's a reason I have nice cars. It's because people expect their realtor to have a nice car. For some reason, it looks like you're successful if you have one.
Especially our market, yeah.
I mean, it's one of these weird things, and we're going to talk about this, but proxies for competence, right? When you're evaluating agents, how do people evaluate their agents? And their branding is one of those things. If they, in lieu of competency, there's no metric of, there's no like scorecard that's publicly available for agents and how well they do. So what do people assume is competency? Well, excessive marketing, maybe high-end marketing would indicate competency. So often agents will proclaim they're number one in the market, even though when they aren't. That might pose as competency. The name of the brokerage, even though every brokerage other than us appears to accept anybody that fogs a mirror and has a license, we don't. And then the car they drive, which is bizarre, but
it's so
agents assume it of each other, and certainly clients do. I think it's subconscious. It's not actually a conscious thing. People just...
I've got thoughts, but let's dive in after we cover the topics du jour.
Okay, all right. Let's cover the topics du jour. So we're going to talk about market conditions in this podcast, effective as of a couple of days ago. And we're going to talk about some recent sales. These are the sales of the week. We also have a couple of listings we'd like to hype. I can't tell you their addresses because of the rules that regulate the industry, but I'll tell you about what they are in case you're listening and interested in buying these homes. And then in the news, we're going to talk about the commission structure changes again, mostly because there's been so much chatter among agents, and I now have a sense of how agents really are feeling about it. So I'd like to talk about that briefly. And then our other topics are that city council in here in Boulder are on retreat and what to expect from that. And then we're going to talk about a recent op-ed in the Daily Camera about our housing crisis. And that should be it. We usually have a section called Tell Me Something I Don't Know. Not sure we're going to have anything on that today, but hopefully there's lots in this podcast that you didn't know beforehand.
I think we will hit our time quota, no problem at all.
Yeah, we'll probably hit an hour. If not, I can probably whip up something you didn't know about the real estate business.
Yeah, we'll shoehorn something in.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so let's dive in. Market conditions. Oh, no, you wanted to jump back to...
Oh, no, we'll do that when we hit the commission structures and stuff there.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, there's like these parallels, right? When you see like somebody roll in with a Rolex and they're under 60, maybe under 50, I think
that you actually matters. Yeah,
you conclude certain things. And when I was a teenager, we went to New York City for $25. I bought a fake Rolex. I was like 14. No, I must have been like 16. I had that thing for like 3 or 4 years, and then eventually got bored with it. But it actually kept time, and it looked like a Rolex. It felt a little chintzy, but the average person could never have told you it wasn't. And when I was 16, that was sort of fun and exciting to have that dumb fake status symbol on my arm. But now I think it's a flex. It's a weird flex. I don't get it.
Unless you know the value, I guess, and can collect them well. Otherwise, I don't necessarily see the appeal, right? Yeah, and at that point, are you wearing it?
Right. I used to have nicer watches, and I think I haven't had a nicer watch. I haven't bought one as an adult. They were given to me. Like, my mom gave me a Rado when I was in my 30s. I still have that in a drawer somewhere. But otherwise, I wear a Garmin because it's functional and useful. And it's weird. So there's a Garmin club, by the way. But I don't disrespect. Like, there's others that notice the Garmin and will say something because they're also, they get it. Like, it's Boulder. There's triathletes everywhere. People are really into fitness and health. And so this is like a sign that you take your fitness and health seriously, but it's not a flex.
Mm-hmm. It's not a status item.
All right. With that said,
yep.
You have a Rolex, I'm not going to be disrespectful to you. And if you're under the age of 50, I will wonder why you have a Rolex, but I won't say anything because it's not our business to judge what watch you wear. And I know there are people that appreciate fine wristwatches and jewelry, and I'm just not that person.
Why don't we revisit this when we come around to tell me something I don't know? We'll just call it watch talk.
Yeah, watch talk. Okay. Because are you into watches, Hamish?
A little. There's a few that I'd really like to have that aren't that expensive, but again, it's just tough to justify. You know.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'll keep working on talking sense into
it. You'll need to.
Okay. Let's talk about market conditions in Boulder County. This is not just the city of Boulder. 41.5% of detached houses are under contract. So 42%. And then for attached properties, these are condos and townhomes, it's 36.8% of properties on the market are under contract. So roughly 37%. And this is quite a bit cooler than previous years, the last few years, where we've seen 50% to be much closer to the norm. But it's not a bad market. The economists will tell you 20% to 25% is probably what's considered a more balanced market. That represents 4 to 6 months of inventory, 4 to 5 months of inventory. I think they really would like you to say six, but six isn't, I haven't seen six since like 2009. So that's very unlikely to see 6 months of inventory. But 42% and 37% represent a market that is cooler than last year by a bit, but not a horrible market for sellers. If you're a condo seller, expect some competition. But here's the interesting thing, right? That's all price points. Let's dive deeper into what it looks like at the entry level and what it looks like at the high end. And in Boulder County, and this isn't really entry, right? Entry is probably 500 or 600, but let's just do a big slice and call it everything under a million. Under a million, 51% of houses are under contract. So there's far more competition among buyers for homes priced under a million, houses priced under a million, with more than half under contract. So that's much more typical. And now flip it around and let's go at the high end, above 3 million. So above 3 million right now, single family houses, there's over 90 on the market and fewer than 10% are under contract.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? It means that there's a buyer's market under above 3 million. However, not all locations, not all property types. Like the super high-end listing I looked at this week on Circle Drive in Boulder, which is just below Flagstaff, that's been on the market a long time, and it's not going anywhere. But it's also double the price or more than this 3 million benchmark. But Newlands, if you were trying to find anything worth buying in the 3 to 4 million range in Newlands, you're going to be challenged. And you won't have five choices. You might have two. So it all depends on price range and location, but keep in mind 10% is that means if we have a seller that comes to me and says, I want to list my home and it's like a $5 or $6 million house, we really have to be careful with price point, marketing, the staging that's involved with the house, how we distribute that marketing, the story we tell in our videography, and making sure that it's really competitive, because 10% or less of inventory under contract points to a high probability of a long time on market.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Don't believe the hype if your agent that you're interviewing says, oh yeah, the market's still hot and you've got a high end listing. You should work with somebody who's giving you the straight talk.
Yep. That manages your expectations correctly and is realistic about what's going on. And on that same breath, these are overall statistics, right? We're looking at Boulder County, which stretches all the way up to Longmont, and a huge swath of data. So your individual criteria may vary, and with that, reach out. We'll get you the data specific to your needs. This covers a large swath of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, 100%. In fact, even on the buy side, you should look at the data, and that's just what I did this morning. It took about an hour. I've got clients thinking about submitting. And they're looking at two different houses that they're thinking about. And so we went through and looked at all the solds in the last 16 months. Well, call it 15 months because March isn't really quite complete. So more than a year's worth of data for these property types, price ranges, locations. And basically both of these homes had maybe 20 comparables that sold in the last 12 months, which isn't horrible. There were 20 in the last 16 months, and of those 20, how many sold for more than list, how many sold for less than list? And for one of them, the homes, there was nothing comparable, really. I mean, the price range, yes, top property type, yes, but not the location. There were no other sales in the neighborhood in the last year for something like this house. So that is going to dictate what they feel comfortable offering. It'll also dictate whether we dial back on inspection contingencies. And all of that is data-driven. It's not driven by, I feel like you should spend more than list on this $4 million. Oh my God, you got to go 200 higher than list. This is so special. Like, show me. on the buy side that this is special, and that way you feel confident when you write the offer.
Make it make sense. And all right, can't give too much away, but we were negotiating an offer on one of our listings, and in order to justify the price, we sent over a data set with all of the comparable listings that had sold in the past, I think down to January 2023, because we wanted to, you know, very much bolster our negotiation, and it makes sense.
We have smart clients.
Yeah.
I mean, I really got to say it, buy and sell side, these are very intelligent people.
It's a privilege.
Often data scientists.
Yeah.
And they want the data. I'll dump it into a spreadsheet. I'll show you where it's even gathered. We'll gather it together. And I don't even need to tell them. They'll just draw the right conclusion like our seller did. Like we sent him the data, and the next day he's like, this is the number I'm thinking about. And the same thing is true with our other listing. Like, okay, here's the data. Let's go through it. And they're like, okay, Osman, what's your number? I'm like, well, this is my number. And they're like, we came up with the exact same number. I'm like, yeah, because that number is sensible.
Yeah.
Yeah. That number is not made up on fiction and wishful thinking and my ego. There's a listing that I won't mention the address or the agent, but that I thought we were listing last fall. And the number I thought that was stretching to list at was 1.95. And of course, I wanted these people to get as much money as possible, but another agent blew in and said, hey, look at my pricing algorithm. It's worth 2.5. Right. And that's what they listed it at. And they wasted 6 months on market. And they've been coming down to reality. They're finally at 1.95. But it has a problem. Because now it's 6 months and 1.95.
Mm-hmm.
You can easily say to the buy side, look, you know, they've already come down $500,000 on price. But that's $500,000 from make-believe. So I really like these people, and I don't want to. And I hope they're not listening. And if they are, I want your best interest in mind. I hope that this agent does eventually sell your home. And I don't represent you, but I feel bad that you got hoodwinked by the agent with the big ego that told you she had a fancy algorithm to price your home. Like that was wishful thinking and ego, and I really wish we could have stopped that from happening. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's move on. All right. We've got to hype our listings.
We do.
Because we've got two egos coming soon. Yeah. This is all about our egos.
Yeah.
That we definitely still have. Clearly, I still have some ego. All right. So. Oh, I shouldn't have mentioned that. Hamish, make a note. Cut the address. Cut that. Bleep it out.
Yeah. That's a good bleep moment.
Just bleep it. Because
the laughter makes it. Yeah.
Right. That's pretty funny. I'm not supposed to mention the address. So we have a new listing coming. It is in North Boulder. It is steps away from North Boulder Park. The sellers made all these improvements to it, including a Tesla roof, Tesla Powerwall. It has a generous sized lot. It has a two-car detached garage. And the home was built in the 1950s or 60s. I'll look it up exactly. It's sort of mid-century, kind of standard ranch design. But the location is so spectacular, and this offers a couple of different options for buyers. And there are other homes on the street that literally have sold recently, because I just mentioned the street again.
Did you again?
That's in the. I did. Yeah, mentioned because we'll need to bleep out. Because when I talk about that that listing in the next section, this property that sold,
we're doing a good dance.
Sale of the week. That is actually a potential future vision for our listing. Meaning, you could turn it into that, put maybe $1 million into it or $500,000 into it, turn it into that house, and get all of your money back and more because of how great this location is. So, great location, livable now, small is beautiful. Lots of energy efficiency and sustainability updates, and cool property just steps away from that North Boulder Park location. So we'll have it on the market probably by about the time you hear this podcast, but maybe a day or two later. And let's not talk about our other one. This one is a two-bedroom, two-bath, second-floor condo at Gold Run. And I can mention the development. I'm not mentioning the address. It will be on the market before the end of the week. Well, actually, it might be next week. We'll see. Hamish, we haven't really discussed timing on that. We need to go look at that property, see what it needs for staging, see what it needs for prep, and get that puppy on the market. But it's perfect for a kitty condo. If you've got a young person that's attending CU, or you're a young professional, it does have an elevator too, so it actually works for tons of people. It's got a great floor plan. It's in a building that is sprinklered.
Its own garage. If
interest rates were lower, I would probably buy this myself. I'm very close to thinking about that. And the problem with how high rates are as an investor is that it just wasn't going to cash flow unless I throw like 50% into it. But if you have a vision for the long term and you have the additional benefit of maybe a child that attending CU, this is a killer place. Mm. This makes so much sense. You will avoid paying a landlord for 4 or 5 years. And you will have a place that you know your kid is safe and just works for lifestyle reasons, for a ton of reasons. Close to CU, right on the Boulder Creek path, right around the corner from Whole Foods is like a 10-minute bike ride. You go through the 29th Street Mall. Scott Carpenter is right there, the park. I mean, there's so much going on with this location. It is, for CU parents buying, I think this is like one of the smartest locations you can buy. Gold Run.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fantastic. I don't want to give away too much, though. Yeah, we'll cross that bridge when we list it. How's that?
We'll cross that bridge when we list it.
Great.
And if you're looking for that type of property, reach out to us. Mm-hmm. Okay, sale of the week. Hamish.
Am I teed up?
Do you want to talk about it first, or should I?
Let me just double check. Yeah, we could talk about this one. This is another really smart client of ours, and I'm hitting our listing first, 3909 Apache Court East. Another smart client of ours, he reached out to us last year, I think late last year, and began the process of, okay, I'd like to put my home on the market, you know, what do we need to do? Let's identify a good time frame and a good kind of mission framework. And I come from the listing side a lot of the time, so I'm involved in the prep. I might not be hitting the points you might want, Osman, so it's good. So yeah, we worked really closely with
him. You're hitting fine points.
Yeah, we worked really... Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Keep going. Yeah. You're doing fine.
So we worked really closely with him in identifying kind of the few things that would need to be updated as far as securing. Our whole goal is minimize time on market, maximize sale price, and also minimize hassle. So we identified a few things to really kind of clean up around the place. He'd done a fantastic job kind of being the steward of the home for the 12 years that he was in it. And so it was just a really nice process altogether. And we identified kind of a challenge being the home's location to the highway, and worked pretty hard to kind of overcome that before get the buyers in the door in order to kind of see that it wasn't necessarily an issue. The first day that I went to go see that house, you know, we come and record it, so we've got the notes to look back on and everything. I was a little worried that I'd hear the highway noise, but even when I stepped out, like the front door, you can hear it, but it's no worse than say Martin Acres or something. And you get inside and it's silent. So it was just a really fun one to put together, and, it looks gorgeous. Yeah.
Yep. So I'll add a couple of details to that. So
please.
It's a triplex. It's a unit in a triplex, and it had three functional bedrooms, although one of the bedrooms was non-conforming because it didn't have an egress window, and the location was a challenge. So it's in Fraser Meadows, and it's close to US 36, so it definitely gets sound noise from US 36, mostly from the front of the driveway. There's a corresponding offset to the location challenge in that it has a giant community park, association-owned park behind it, over 2 acres, and the sliding glass doors open to that. So you get this great view of the backyard.
You're
all the way to
the
community
in
the
pool. Park, yeah.
So it feels very spacious inside, even though it's a triplex. It feels very, there's an emotional tenor to having what looks like open space and your home designed to show that from inside. Even including the primary bedroom, where you probably won't leave your curtains open because it's your primary bedroom. But if you wanted to sit there and have a cup of coffee in the morning on a Sunday and watch, you know, kids play in the park and people throw frisbees at their dog, you can do that. And that's really lovely. And that was the offset to the location.
Absolutely.
But I was worried about this location because seven years ago, I had a listing on Fox Drive. And that listing, which is right around the corner, took a really long time to sell. And these past clients had done many deals with me and were getting frustrated. And they were convinced that switching to a bigger brokerage would help them. Mm. And I told them that's not the case, but I don't want to damage our relationship. So we've already gone 6 months. It's taking a long time to sell. If you really feel strongly that you want to try somebody else, we'll step aside. I would never do that today, by the way. I don't know what I was thinking, because I knew the answer is that Remax is no different, in fact, worse than our. And now we do so much better marketing that it's not even close compared to what this agent does.
Right.
But they went to a different agent, and it still sat on the market for several more months before it sold, which is exactly what would have happened if we just kept it. But I knew that location was a challenge at the time when the market was slower. So I was really surprised. The seller did so much work on this house. His wife, it's two of them. It was only one name on title, but they both worked really hard on this house, and it showed. And it wasn't done cheaply. The bathrooms were updated. The kitchen was updated. They followed our advice on staging, and everything looked spectacular. So it dotted the I's and crossed the T's, and even though we listed it in the middle of that snowstorm, so here's the real story of the deal.
Yeah, this is the fun part.
Yeah, so and we put it on coming soon because of that snowstorm. We're like, no one's going to want to see that. We're going to lose showings if we list it. And, you know, the snowstorm was ending, but the streets still had 8 inches of slush on them.
Mm-hmm.
So we put it in coming soon status for a week. And that created a bit of a feeding frenzy. People wanted to see it. And one agent in particular reached out and said, please, please, please let me see it. My buyers are in town. It's perfect for them. They're leaving this weekend, and if they can't see it this weekend, they won't see it at all. They're cash. They'll close fast. Okay, so we said, if we're going to let you see it, we have to let the whole market see it. So we flipped it to active status and let the whole market see it. They submitted an offer, and we forced them to give us 48 hours to show it. And during those 48 hours, another buyer – so this is for fair housing reasons. This is so – we're not discriminating against people, that enough people have an opportunity to see it in 48 hours from when the first offer was received.
And also that to see offer, what other offers are out there, right? Actually test right. the market.
Yeah. For the seller to potentially get a better offer, it's also in the benefit of our client to let the whole market see it. So 48 hours should be enough for people to pick up the phone and call me if they have a serious client, because you have to move fast in Boulder real estate. That's just a given.
Especially
if you're not,
when there's a compelling property.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pro tip, if your agent doesn't have a plan for when they go on vacation to cover for you that has fast response times, like less than 24 hours, they should be responding to emails and phone calls the same day as long as they're not received late in the evening.
Yeah.
But your agent needs to be responsive. And so the first offer was received. It was cash. It was full price. It was closing really fast. And then the second offer was received, $15,000 higher, but not... Oh, I don't know. Was it an originally 15 higher? I can't remember exactly. I think it was the same price, but not cash.
Yeah.
And then we went back to both of those people
and
said, submit, you know, resubmit. And because we're going to give both of you a shot, right? And they both did. Well, no, one did. The other one didn't. And they ended up 15 higher with faster closing, cash, limited inspection rights. And during that time period, so we went with the second offer. The first people refused to believe it or weren't willing to bump the price. So they lost out. They went to another property that their agent said that they didn't like as much.
Mm-hmm.
And these people had the money. They submitted a proof of funds that was well above the purchase price. And then during the next week, we actually got a backup offer that was 10 higher than the offer that was under contract for. So that could have, if the buyer who had it under contract and eventually closed decided to flake out, for whatever reason, we would have gone to the backup.
Absolutely.
And so it's always smart to submit a backup. And I wasn't sure literally until we passed inspection objection that we didn't need that backup. I feel a little bad for that agent that submitted the backup because, you know, she was really hopeful that it would first deal would break up, but it didn't.
Yeah. What was I going to say? No, I don't. I won't share that. But I think we had it coming soon for maybe 2 days.
You could
share
it, Hamish.
Okay.
I think I know what you're about to share. So go ahead and share it.
I'm not sure. I was we'd conference call when we talk to these agents and do a little back and forth, mostly so I can get some experience, but also I'll catch a detail or two or get notes down. And it was really funny, you know, Osmond's like, we have this other offer, it's at this price, you know, can your buyer meet it? And the agent's like, okay, so will our offer get accepted if we come in at this price all cash? And Osmond's like, yes. And then the agent's like, what about 10 grand? It was the funniest thing.
That was pretty funny. Yeah. And she's with her clients and she's negotiating the wrong way.
It's so good. And I mean, like, professionally and everything, they're fantastic to work with these people, and it all worked out. And, like, I feel a little bad that they didn't get the offer accepted and everything, but it was just so funny to start high and then try to go low. You're like, oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll mention something that I think is worth mentioning, that it was no factor. Other than the tenor of how that could go, because real estate transactions have a high degree of trust, right? The more trust, the smoother the deal is going to go. And that trust is engendered in multiple phases, right? By doing a pre-inspection on the home before you list it, you increase trust because you show the buy side all the problems with it. By choosing an agent that has good communication, verbal and written, and will use those skills in communicating with the other side, you increase trust. By not hiding things, you increase trust, right? Mm-hmm. By not acting shady, you increase trust. And there are some agents in town that have very good reputations and some agents that don't, and we work with all of them because it's not about the agent reputation, but those factors come into play, particularly when there's multiple offers, because you're reading the tea leaves of who's most likely to close. And 100% your agent selection can have an impact on that. And that's one of the reasons I do, well, not just, I do everything I can to behave within integrity, honesty, ethical behavior for myself and my clients, not just for that reason, because it's how I'm wired. But still, those behaviors influence future deals. And so we try to keep things on the path of behaving ethically and honestly.
Mm-hmm.
And this second offer, the people who bought the home were represented by somebody with whom I don't have the best negotiation history because she's my ex. And we haven't done a deal in 10 years since we split up. But I had to disclose that to my seller. I'm like, you need to know that this is somebody with whom I know really well. We worked together incredibly well for a long time until we didn't. So I could tell you she's competent and she does good work. But we also are likely to go off into the weeds on negotiation very easily because there's subconscious stuff that may still exist. It's no factor for me. I will do my best for you, but I need to tell you that as a disclosure item. Mm-hmm. And he was like, oh, well, what sort of terms have you left it on? Like, well, we shared a golden retriever for many years after that, and we got through it. But it wasn't easy all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And to my ex's credit, the deal was very smooth, and she handled things very professionally, and we did not go off into the weeds. And so I'm very happy for her buyer. They got in a fantastic property, and they got it for a very good price, given there was somebody else willing to spend $10,000 more. The deal worked out, and this was the very first deal with my ex and I on opposite sides of the transaction. I think it's important to disclose that sort of thing because it might have an influence.
Mm-hmm.
But and it did give the seller pause for a moment. And honestly, I was really hoping that that first cash buyer just came in and blew out the offer, you know, came in at like 925 or something and they had to have it, but they didn't. And they stood firm on their original price. So end of the day, it all worked out. So I did want to mention that as tales of the trench.
Yeah. No, and it worked out well. I think the whole time it seemed very amicable, and I was involved in a lot of the back and forth. And honestly, one of the smoother deals we've been involved in.
So, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. And cherry on the top.
I have another cherry.
We included a photo.
Oh, you got it.
The seller's cat in the listing photo. So you'll still see this at 3909 Apache. And that cat enjoyed the fireplace for its senior years. And there's a great photo of it stretching out and relaxing by the fire, glass fronted fireplace on a nice little cat bed. And the buyers mentioned that photo and asked about the cat. And after closing, they sent us a photo of their senior cat napping by the
almost
by
the same photo, just relaxing. Like that.
Yeah, not napping, but clearly relaxing by the fire in the cat bed. And I don't know, that just seemed very touching to know that it went from one cat to another cat's favorite spot. You know, there's something kind of special about that.
Especially, like, I imagine these buyers saw the ad, saw the listing, and saw the cat, and maybe that did something for them, but it's almost funny because they're like, oh, we can recreate that exact moment, and here we are recreating it, you know, it was the day of possession, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it's the perfect spot for a cat bed.
Yep. I mean, a human bed if you could fit, but you can't.
Yeah, if you could. all right, so let's move on to our next sale of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And the relevance of this property is that it's near our listing, and it's on a similarly sized lot, and it's the potential future of our listing. If someone wanted to invest in updating it, it is proof of concept that this location holds tremendous value. So this is a couple of blocks further east, and it's located on 804 Alpine, and so it's much more impacted by the Alpine Balsam project, right? So our listing, which is in the neighborhood and further west, is far less impacted because it's two blocks further west. Mm. And as you probably know, if you're listening to this podcast, open space in Boulder on the west side of town is like waterfront in a seaside property or a lakeside property. The closer you are to the water or the open space trails in the mountains or the foothills here in Boulder, the more valuable your property. So our listing's in the neighborhood a few blocks east, and it could easily be turned into this property at 804 Alpine. Should a buyer want to invest the capital to do that? And this shows that the market supports this sort of future for our listing.
Mm-hmm.
So 804 Alpine is a 3,700 square foot home built in 2013 with a one car attached garage, not a two car.
A cool and garage too. Did you see it?
Oh, I didn't.
It opens from the front too.
So Hamish, be sure we include a link to realtor.com or Zillow or whatever in the show notes. I mean, this home is really nice, even though it's now 11 years old. The finish choices are lovely. I don't know if that weathered wood siding is still the look for a primary bedroom, but that's easy enough to tear out and drywall.
Mm.
I mean, as far as it goes, I would say it's like, it's still very
contemporary,
acceptable
in
terms of its finish quality and its fixtures. There's nothing really glaringly painful. And that garage is very cool that it opens on both sides. And listing agent did a good job showing the Porsche nose poking out. We're big fans of sneaking Porsches into our listings as well, especially when you've got a cool garage.
Yeah.
And really nice. I mean, nicely designed house. There's no argument, right? It's a little narrow, a little tall, because that's what you do when you are in this neighborhood.
That's
but
the new
great list, spot, yeah. North-south facing. And proof of concept for our listing that's coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And this property was on the market for a little bit. It wasn't. It basically went under contract immediately and pre-listing. So an agent with WK got wind of it, and an agent with the agency is the listing agent sold it. So arm length transaction from that perspective, but went under contract with 0 days on market. So it was snapped up very quickly, not even in coming soon status. So this is the type of thing, by the way, that I warn my sellers about, that if somebody through our networks hears about it and makes an offer, it really better be compelling, because you do take some chance by not showing it to the whole market that you left money on the table. And you also take some chance that maybe it's discriminatory against other buyers,
mm-hmm.
Because no one else got a shot at this other than this buyer's agent who somehow got wind of it before it hit the market.
One thing about this primary bedroom, I love where it's like almost like a wall in the middle of the room, and behind that wall is your closet or your bathroom and everything else, and then that bed kind of just faces away from everything else. Just that layout is one of my favorites for a bedroom.
Yeah, but Hamish, then you're going to hear your partner like using the bathroom in the morning.
Oh, no. terrible.
Very intimate.
How will
sounds.
I survive?
You could be hearing some intimate sounds if it's designed with an open bathroom.
Yeah,
open closet's one
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, this is open
but
closet.
Open bathroom.
But yeah, okay. Adored bathroom, but I just like that everything's kind of behind the bed, and the bed is really the bedroom, and that's about it, and that's well placed.
I agree with you. I agree with you fully that this is not the bathroom; it's the closet, and that's totally fine. Bathrooms are no. Don't have open bathrooms.
You mentioned it with like we like to get the Porsches and the listings, but same. We had a listing a while back now, 4170 Pignon, and the primary bedroom, totally different era of home, but has the same kind of deal. That closet and bath and everything were tucked away, and the bed was really just its own piece in the room. Yeah.
That's one of my favorite listings ever, and I'm totally. Pretty sure set a new high benchmark for valuation in Fraser Meadows.
No doubt.
And awesome clients. I hope to visit them. In fact, I need to reach out to them this summer and see how their availability looks, because we are in discussion about visiting them in Europe.
Awesome. What else is there going to... I think that's all I had.
Yep. Yeah. Okay, so 735 a square, 3,700 square foot house, south facing, I'm sorry, north facing, and very close to North Boulder Park, just like our listing that's in the same neighborhood, a couple of blocks to the west. And buyers should be thinking about, I think smart buyers should always be thinking about the exit. Like at some point, maybe you need a bigger home.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're going to go put $1 million into this location, does it support the value? It does. 100%. The future has lots of possibilities for our listing because of other homes. Because it's just the location supports much higher end homes.
Yeah.
So, and we haven't fully priced our listing yet. We'll work on that in the next couple of days, and it will be on the market probably by Wednesday or maybe Thursday this week.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
Shall we move on?
Yeah. I'd just like to second. It's Osman doesn't believe in selling his property. And I'm starting to get infected by that same train of belief. But you should still be looking at, like, if you had to liquidate, if you had to get rid of this property, how is it going to sell? I just wanted to double down on that because I think that's a really important point that you bring up pretty frequently. So, yeah,
thanks,
echoed.
I appreciate that. Let me clarify what he meant by that. When I buy property for my personal investment portfolio, for our family's portfolio, I don't buy it to sell. So even though I think about exit strategy as part of my normal investment due diligence, it's not an actual exit mm-hmm. that I'm ever planning to execute. I think that dying with a nice portfolio of rental properties that are well-maintained and are good homes for people is a worthwhile goal. But if at the end of my life I decide I want to liquidate them, I definitely have thought about the exits. But it's also if you decide you want to invest further in this property.
Yeah.
There's a friend of mine who has put a lot of money into his home in Denver, and the home is in a neighborhood that doesn't support the value of how much money they put in. So they're what's called overcapitalizing the investment. It's the most expensive house in the neighborhood. That's not a smart choice. And they've also done some design things that I think will make it more challenging to sell in the future too. He is not my real estate client. He is my friend, and I really hope they're successful whatever they decide to do. I don't think they're planning to move ever, but they overcapitalized.
Yeah.
This neighborhood would be very difficult to overcapitalize, and that's just something to keep in mind if you're faced with that investment decision. Put $1 million into a piece of Boulder property or not. Well, you better make sure that the neighborhood supports that value.
Yeah. I butt up against that train of thought a lot when I think about my home. Because, you know, I fall in love with it and I want to do everything and make it super cool, especially all the luxury homes that we see out in the market in Boulder and stuff. And then I'm like, hold on, what's my neighborhood going for, you know, like reel it in. But,
right. Well, you haven't asked my opinion on any of this, Hamish, and that's totally fine. I'm not offended.
I haven't done anything yet, to be fair.
I would also be thinking about durability,
mm.
right? So any finish choices, any fixture choices, because ultimately I would expect your property to become a rental and you go buy something else.
Yeah.
Because that way you get the residential mortgage rate, you know the home. So any upgrades you do should be geared towards
longevity.
Can a tenant destroy it? And how long would it take for them to destroy it?
Positive thoughts. That's what it should be geared towards.
It is positive thoughts. I just saw a home that we used to live in on in Boulder. We were doing an inspection on it for rental purposes. And as we're walking around, they mentioned the dryer's not working very well. So I went over and looked at it, and I didn't turn it on. But I immediately remembered when we bought this washer dryer. Because, one, we had to be really careful with measurements because of how tight the space is. And two, we went for the upgraded steam-capable dryer. And I was like, and I told the tenant, who's lovely, and their kids are there, and actually it's really nice to see a family in this house.
They're great people,
I was like,
too.
We would never buy this dryer today. Like, this thing's got a water line to it. Like, there's zero chance that I would put this dryer into a tenant property. Right. This is a horrible idea.
Yeah. No, good point. Yep. Okay. Where are we at?
Okay, we're moving on. Okay. In the news. It's been a couple of weeks since the commission structure changes the settlement between the National Association and the litigants were announced. And that settlement was something like 480-something million, which apparently the NAR is going to pay off in 4 years. And also some structural changes to how commissions are inputted on the MLS, on MLS systems. We've talked about this the last couple of podcasts, but what we didn't talk about was really how agents are reacting. And now after a couple of weeks and having lots of conversations with agents, what's become clear is what I wanted to share with you is what's happening among agents as we talk about this situation. And across the board, the experienced agents that are good at what they do have said no factor.
Mm-hmm.
We've been highlighting what we do on the buy side and putting it into our buyer agency agreements, our commission structure, for years. And I mean, we've been doing that at least 6 or 7 years at House Einstein. So, and we've broken it down. I look at it as an opportunity to talk about property selection, the process that we go through in pointing out not just what's right, but what's wrong with each listing, often before we even go see it. We talk about our negotiation skills and advantage in negotiation, which sometimes is just helping you get a seat at the bidding war, right? We understand the contracts. We work really hard on negotiation skills. We talk about due diligence, which is something most agents will not even touch. And that's in our buyer agency agreement, that we will help support your due diligence. And we've got a lot of experience with this. So yes, we will help you with your due diligence. We even have a checklist of due diligence. Mm-hmm. And then if something is found that's wrong, we will help get you out of the contract per the terms of the contract. But hopefully nothing is wrong. And we, if there's something wrong that we can negotiate, we will again negotiate for you as aggressively as we can to help you get these issues resolved. And then we help you get to closing. All the way through, we're going to hold your hand on the buy side. And so there's multiple phases that we will work with you as a buyer's agent. And what I've found is that that is not what most buyer's agents do.
No.
And on the listing side, the number of agents that show up unprepared, no knowledge of the neighborhood, no knowledge of property types, completely clueless, they're just opening the door, is just astounding. And they're also collecting sometimes between 2.5 and 3% of the total commission of the deal. And that's one of the reasons I started attending almost all of her showings, or asking you to, Hamish, is because the buy side was so, frankly, incompetent in general. I hate to say it, but that's what I was looking at. And so all of the agents that are senior and experienced and know what they're doing are not freaked out at all about buy-side commissions. In fact, most of us are looking forward to the exit of all the part-timers, all the people that just sell to their friends and family, and all the people that don't know better, because those people will now be forced to have a conversation with their client about what their actual services are. And I don't think commissions are going to go down very much. They might, but they're not going to go down massively, because licensing is challenging. People do want to have representation, but I think it might get closer to what we see in Europe. But the sell side, the agents I've talked to, some of them have talked about increasing their commissions.
Yeah.
Because some of them are throwing in staging and they're full service agents. And in fact, we're seriously looking at that business model ourselves, is including staging into all of our listings just because of how more effective it is.
Incredibly, yeah.
One agent I know says she's been charging 7% for years for her listings, and she's really good at what she does. It's all inclusive, and she's more than happy to drop it to 4 and let the buy side fend for itself.
Mm-hmm.
That's her perspective. I was like, wow. Yeah. Okay. I mean, we don't charge 4% on our listings, but she's not the only agent I've heard say that they charge sellers 4%.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that on the street.
Yeah, word on the street.
And I guess this is word on the street is that experienced agents are not freaking out. But the ones that are inexperienced, that literally are not adding value, are freaked out. And they are likely to have to exit the business because they can't have this conversation with potential buyers about what actual value add they have other than showing up to open the door.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of it in a nutshell.
Yeah. No, I genuinely don't have any comments to that. I am pretty much on board with all of it. I'll say, like, you know, when on the buy side as well, before I head out for a day of showings or something, I'll print out a hot sheet of all the details on the listings that we're going to go see, and I'll read the broker marks. And, you know, I'd like to be as informed as possible before I show up to the house.
Right.
And I just don't see that. Yeah.
I mean, I had a listing a few years ago, and this was one of the first ones I started attending all showings. And I attended all the showings on this one because the home had an in-ground pool and a bunch of weird features. Well, unique features.
Nice.
And the location had some unique aspects to it that if you did not know these things, you would not be able to, just would not be presenting the home very well.
Right.
And the number of agents that showed up with buyers they didn't know, that literally somebody had clicked a button on Redfin or Zillow and scheduled a showing. And these agents frequently were from Denver. It was just astounding how little they knew about real estate, the neighborhood, due diligence, any of those things. And so that's why we do our best to attend all showings now. And I'm really looking forward to a lot of those part-timers that are overcompensated exiting because they aren't acting in their client's best interest. They're not acting as fiduciaries. They're not good at negotiation. They're literally shoving somebody in a house and collecting 2.5% to 3% commission on it. And of course that goes, you know, to the brokerage itself and pays for assistance and all sorts of stuff. But it's just, I don't know. I'm glad to see the change.
And I think you briefly touched on it with the part-timers. There's a large amount, a huge percentage of agents that are part-timers or like hobbyist agents, you know? And they're, I hate negging, but like the experience level isn't the same, you know? Career agents live and breathe this stuff. You know, they're going to work for it. They're going to put in the hard, you know, the hard yards and everything. And it kind of shakes the competition a little bit.
There are great part-time agents out there too. That's not necessarily a red flag, but it's a yellow flag. And so we have a whole podcast devoted to interviewing agents, but there are subtle signs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you can use how long they've been in the business as one proxy for competence. You can use what they did before they got into real estate as a proxy for competence. You can talk to referrals, but the problem is the referrals don't often have a lot of experience. So it'd be like, yeah, my dentist was nice. It didn't hurt my tooth. But that doesn't mean the dentist did a good job with the filling at all.
Talk to the title company.
Dentist could have been a hack, right? Or, yeah, talk to title companies. That's one way. Title company reps that will tell you who's actually competent. Don't rely on the fanciness of their car. Don't rely on the fanciness of their watch. Don't rely on the fact they wear a suit. Don't rely on any of what – don't rely on the brokerage they've chosen because all of these brokerages here in Colorado will choose they're shiny wrappers, right? They don't care which agent.
Yeah.
They don't care about the experience. They don't say no. They're happy to take anybody that can fog a mirror. And some
– they rely on
sometimes
their brand.
There's hidden things.
Yeah.
I had a conversation, and I'll mention this brokerage by name. I don't normally criticize by name. But it is what it is. So this brokerage is called HomeSmart Realty. So HomeSmart Realty has a business model where agents don't pay splits. They pay fees. And so the agents that typically are drawn to HomeSmart want to pay nothing for service support. They don't think they've ever gotten support from other brokerages. They want to do it all themselves. They do the photography. They do every aspect of it. And they pay desk fees. And those desk fees are actually pretty steep when you add them all up. And at the end of the day, they get nothing for what – they're just hanging their license with this brokerage. And there have been lots of these come and go over the years in Colorado. HomeSmart seems to be the latest I've just noticed.
Desk fees, and I just office talked fees, to, same name, right?
Yeah. I just talked to a agent that switched to 8Z who was on the luxury home tour this week. And I asked, so why did you switch to 8Z? And she's like, I just got tired of all these crazy fees and getting nothing from the brokerage. And I was like, well, you know, my perception of HomeSmart is that this is like a discount brokerage. It's the people that don't want to pay any fees. And they've got this mentality of I get 100% of the commission, but they don't see the big picture of all the work that goes into a successful real estate business. Mm-hmm. And she's like, bingo, that was my experience. And she, you know, literally hung her license there for years and just switched to 8Z. And she's really happy with 8Z.
Good for her.
And it's the opposite with 8Z. Yeah. Yeah. I've heard good things about 8Z and Lane.
They present well.
I know he actually was. They do. He was connected with Good to Great, the author of Good to Great. I'm not exactly sure what his connection was. Maybe he was an associate with the author of that book. And I've read that book and loved it too. And it looks like 8Z is a very reputable brokerage, but it's compared to us, it's like 10 times the size. Mm-hmm. Right, or more. It's 100 times, or it's probably 50 times the size of our brokerage. So I think she said there are 150 agents and they're looking to get to 200. But heavens. Anyway, you may want to ask, you know, if you're thinking about working with an agent outside of House Einstein, you may want to ask, look for these proxies for competency and ask, why are they with this particular brokerage? Mm-hmm. And the answers to that are fascinating and will tell you a lot.
Yeah. And look at that, you know, we criticized by name, but we also came in with some accolades by name, too. Accolades? Compliments?
Yeah. Accolades. Oh, yeah, praise by name. Yeah, we praise by name. Criticize by name. Yeah. Although I don't think my evaluation of HomeSmart is actually criticism. It's true. I think that coming directly from one of their former agents, why do people join HomeSmart? It's all about the fact they keep 100% of the split. Mm-hmm. That's why they join. She doesn't deny that. She said bingo. So I don't think that's a criticism. That's just their business model.
Yeah.
And discount brokerages in general tend to attract a certain approach to real estate. That's my criticism. And you may want to, and that's a general criticism about discount brokerages, not HomeSmart. But 8Z, praise by name. I like their branding. All of the agents I've ever done deals with at 8Z are very competent. And even their rental side of the business, the guy that runs that I know and have met with a couple of times, and he's very competent too. So I don't have any issues with 8Z. They're just a regional competitor.
Yep.
So, okay. Let's move on to other news items.
Yeah. What do we have here?
City Council here in Boulder is on its retreat, and there's a great article in the Daily Camera that talks about what to expect. It's written by Amber Carlson, who covers council. And it says, on Wednesday, the first day of the retreat, council members will give statements on their vision and talk about how to streamline decision-making and improve processes and do a preview of their priorities. Okay, so they're going to talk about what they care about, and they're going to talk about processes, and probably there's going to be some training for the new council members because they don't really know how it works. Mm. And then Thursday, they're going to be talking with each other and staff, and about the values that matter to them, and try to establish a list of priorities with Heather Bergman, the facilitator. And that's sort of where we're going to land. And so my perspective on this is, hey, do you know much about City Council and how it works?
Not enough. Just getting into this world, yeah.
Have you seen Wag the Dog?
No, I'm adding that to the list, too.
Okay. You may want to have that on your Saturday night movie list. But it's basically about manufactured controversy and political action. And here in Boulder, staff has a very strong influence over what's on the agenda. Mm-hmm. And in many ways, they drive the bus because they're full-time employees. And what they put on the agenda and how they develop that is really what's going to dictate what gets done.
Right.
And so staff has a lot of power in the city. And the council priorities, I think we already know what's going to shake out of this, which is more housing. Zoning, that is a huge priority. Downzoning or upzoning, I don't know what you want to call it, but rezoning or removing zoning, allowing ADUs and triplexes by right, that's the future. And it's the writing has been on the wall for a long time. Don't expect anything different on that front. The outrage over our homeless or those experiencing homelessness population continues to rile our city. And it's not getting better. It's clearly getting worse. And so
controversy increases.
I think, clearly our voter population is reaching
critical mass
capacity of tolerance. Yeah. And we, if you, I would ask council to show me how much we spend on our homelessness issue as a percentage of our budget compared to any other city on the Front Range. And I suspect we spend more than anybody. Mm. By far, as a percentage of our budget. And meanwhile, we've got issues with roads, we've got other issues going on, and spending money has not solved it. But likely, spending money will be on the agenda, and how we change how we spend money, the controversy over encampments and cleanup will continue. And so that's what I would 100% expect to come out of City Council's agenda after the retreat. And I really, really hope that what's not on the agenda is coming up with official positions on the war in Israel and Palestine. I really hope that that's not on our agenda, because that just shows a council that's completely distracted. This is an issue that's not a city level issue, but it is an issue. It's just not an issue for City Council. Yeah,
stay in their wheelhouse. There's enough going on at home. Yeah.
I'm not running for council, and I want to make that clear.
Yes.
But operating the city should be the city's number one priority in a way that's effective, that fosters community and resource use by the people that live in the city. Safety is really important in our parks and our bike paths, and cleanup of all the detritus left by encampments, so that these parks are safe. Your kids can run around barefoot and not worry about a needle in their foot. Mm. That's really important. And we've gone to the point where our E. coli readings are often high in the creek because people are using it as a latrine. Mm. And we have people camping all over the place. And it's just, I understand there's legal issues with enforcement, but at the same time, solving this without spending more money, I think, should be the priority. Mm. And, of course, arts and culture. Yeah. As a board member of the dairy, I really would like to continue to support the dairy. The expression of humanity is really important, and the dairy is doing a fantastic job. And so I really would like our partnership. Speaking as an individual who happens to be on the board of the dairy, I would like our partnership to continue to be strong and for the city to recognize what the dairy does for our community. It's really, there's no other space like it. Mm. And it's not just the dairy. There are all these nonprofits that sit under it.
So where is their retreat?
I don't know if they actually go anywhere. Okay. I think they just call it a retreat and they sit in council chambers. I don't think they actually go. Unlike our where House Einstein takes the company to Mexico, that doesn't happen with the city.
Could you imagine the outrage from like homeowners and stuff if they were going somewhere extravagant?
Hopped on a private flight and went to Vegas for the weekend. Yeah. It doesn't happen. So I'm pretty sure their retreat is in-house. Mm. I believe in getting us the heck out of town, because I think it really helps us all to sit down together.
Perspective, too.
And talk about our priorities, connect with each other as humans, because we work so closely together. But that's not City Council. No.
We kind of hit the second news point a little bit.
Maybe. So there's another news article. This is by former councilperson Steve Pomerantz, who really annoys people in the city, particularly those that are on the progressive side of politics because of his conservatism and directness. But he does like to throw cold water and data and facts at the population, and he frequently gets editorials in the camera for that reason. And his editorial, which was published on March 24th, is titled, "We Can't Build Our Way Out of This Housing Crisis Without Dramatically Reducing Quality of Life. Other crises like water and transit must be addressed." And it's sort of like redundant truism, mm-hmm. like 100%. We can't build more housing without destroying the quality of life in Boulder. Anybody who's honest about the reality of density can see that. And when people challenge me on this, I ask them, okay, so Boulder's not full. What number do you think Boulder is full at? And show me a city that has high density and high quality of life that you would want to move to. And why aren't you moving there? Like, why aren't you living in Denver? Why aren't you living in New York City or other high density locations? And the answer is quality of life sucks and it's really expensive.
Having not read this article, I would also say that it brings up a good point and also an opportunity that maybe is being missed, but all of these cities that are high density, that have low quality of life, have grown far faster than they've been able to build the infrastructure around it. So if we are planning to grow, it's a good warning to go, hey, why don't we also improve and learn from the follies of cities that have outpaced their infrastructure? You know, our roads are pretty, you know, set in stone, set in asphalt, but yeah.
Well, they're not set in stone. I remember seeing this postcard of New York City's Park Avenue. Mm. Do you know why it was called Park Avenue?
Was it a parking lot? I have no idea.
It was a park.
Okay.
It was a city park. The entire avenue was a city park, and they paved it over to make it faster for transit to come through. Mm. So my point is that, yes, we should invest in infrastructure, as Steve points out. We should have far better transit to the L's, for example, Louisville, Lafayette, Longmont. There should, and not just buses. People hate buses. It really should be light rail, and we should invest in that. But we shouldn't invest in just density without carefully managing the impacts on quality of life. And removing parks for housing, building 4, 5, 6-story buildings that block out the view of the Flatirons, none of that's going to increase the quality of life. And so I'm very hesitant. I know we need more housing. We will never build enough for all the people that want to live here. It will never be easily affordable for market rate property in the city of Boulder during our lifetime, unless something horrible happens, right? Unless there's some apocalyptic event. I don't see Boulder real estate becoming less attractive. So with a goal of 30% affordable housing, which we're actually quite close to reaching, now what? Once we hit 30, you've squeezed out the middle. You have very high end and entry, and you have affordable housing, mostly which are rentals.
Mm-hmm. That you can't own.
That's the future that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that you can't own. And that's the future that our government has built. And it's really disappointing. And so I'm not a huge fan of Steve, but I like that he's just tries to point out kind of the mathematical obvious. And also, what are the other issues we need to focus on? Transit and water. Yes, absolutely. Job linkage fees, sure. We have, you know, most cities are desperate to bring in new employers. Our city's trying to figure out a way how to tax it out of possibility. Like, let's make it more expensive to have employees here. So I'm not kidding you. I've been in council meetings where they're like, how do we make Boulder less attractive? That came out of a council member's mouth.
Well, they're
less attractive to business.
They're on the playing hard to get strategy, and it's working.
Well, it's an entitled perspective, right? Yeah. I mean, historically, Boulder Council members have been affluent or retirees that have made their money. And from their perspective, they don't care that there's great jobs in Boulder to support not just the workers at Whole Foods and restaurants and shops, but actual professionals that can afford to live here. That's not their priority. Their money's coming from somewhere else. So it's an entitled perspective.
I was just saying, because it's not working, right? Because there's still the demand. It's like they're playing hard to get. And you know,
I get what you're saying. Yeah. Right. Well, they're playing hard to get, but they're playing don't choose me.
Yeah.
Really. How do we make... And their answer is always, how do we make more money to make it less attractive, which increases the city coffers? And the bureaucracy, the staff, the whole system benefits from more money in the system. So... It's people will argue for their interests, staff included.
Oh yeah,
and that's something to keep in mind. Okay, we really have gone deep.
Yes, we have.
And now I've revealed way too much about my political position. But what am I going to do? I guess I should.
You can always get
I'm
canceled.
An independent, for the record. I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. I want to make that abundantly clear. Please don't cancel me.
It's too late. All right. I don't know. We covered a few things that I wouldn't know. tell me this something I don't know topic. But
all right, let's skip the official tell me something I don't know.
Okay.
And let's go ahead and wrap this up, Hamish. Do you want to give it a shout? Do you want to give it a wrap up?
I'm happy to. I'm out of practice, so bear with me here. So if you have made it this far, thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to check us out pretty much everywhere else you may social media. We're on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, even LinkedIn, if that's your social media of choice, X, Twitter. And we have a bunch of videos, neighborhood videos, these podcasts, of course, our listings. Osman writes a fantastic newsletter that's been nationally recognized, probably almost internationally recognized. We do have the odd German reader on our website. Hold on. Okay.
It is international. There are international readers. And I have been quoted in the Daily Hammer and the Wall Street Journal, but the podcast is not internationally, the blog and the podcast are not internationally awarded.
No.
Yet. I want to be a little humble. We do our best, but we are not like...
But it's dang good, and you should go ahead and subscribe. It's in our website. The top tab says newsletter, and you go ahead and fill out all your little interests, and we work to kind of make the newsletter fit all of our readers. And ultimately, thank you for joining us. We love the feedback. We love the comments. We like the likes. Shout out to Standard Bike Repair for being our loyal listener. And yeah, I think that's... That's my wrap-up, Osman.
Well, I appreciate that, especially the shout-out to Standard Bike Repair. We definitely appreciate all the comments, not just from him, but other people that have shared them with me privately. And our goal is to help you make a smarter decision. We're doing our best. Hopefully, we entertained you. And hopefully, what I said won't result in me being canceled. And if so, well,
it's been a good run.
It was a good run.
All righty. And stay posted. If this podcast is out, it's very likely we have one, maybe two listings out as well. And we'll go from there.
All right. We'll catch you next time. Thanks, everybody.